Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
I am doing question mark millennial Ben presented by Breaks Plus. And this question comes in on the RamosLaw.com text line with the hash brown, send it to the internet. Urgency that immediately gets you to the front of the line. Mark, what did you think of Pat Shurmur's play calling? That's a good question. After all the...
We were actually trying to throw incompletions.
After all the negative attention that he deserved last year, how did he do yesterday?
I thought he was really good. You know, they paid attention. They paid attention to the running game. They had... a nickel run play, you know, nickel run plays that I thought kept the defense off balance. When you assume as a defense that you're going to get, you know, you're going to get a throw in a long situation, and he punished them with a couple of runs in those situations that make you play the game, that make you play the game honestly as a defense. And then I thought they did a great job of being on schedule, Mike, and being in a lot of third down and four minus situations where you have duality, where you have to defend both the run and the pass. And that gives you an opportunity to be really good in those situations. What were they on third down? Seven of 15.
And 3 of 3 on fourth down.
Right.
And I look at that drive that they started off the second half where they took control of the game. They go 75 yards, long possession, another one of those 8 minute plus possessions, but they converted a 3rd and 5, a 3rd and 6, a 3rd and 4, a 3rd and 7, a 3rd and 8 to a 4th and 1, which they then converted for a touchdown. So they were flawless on that drive. 5 for 5 on third down and 1 for 1 on fourth.
Yeah.
But you look, yeah, like you always say, 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6, 3rd and 4, 4th and 1. There was the 3rd and 7, a 3rd and 8. But, you know, you weren't in that 3rd and 10, 3rd and 11. It was manageable third downs is what you're harping on.
Yes, manageable third downs. And so I thought Pat was good calling the plays and put them in really good situations. I thought he used personnel exceptionally well when it came to – mixing it up with 3 wide receivers and, you know, multiple tight ends and, you know, indicators, early indicators for Teddy Bridgewater, motion on the backs out of the backfield to see if, you know, to see if they got man or zone looks. I mean, all the things that you want to do as a coordinator to give your quarterback as much information as you can possibly give him pre-snap. And I thought he did all those things well.
Well, you've got a lot of mouths to feed on this offense. You got a lot of young players who want touches, want carries. They want to put up numbers to be able to get that next contract. And I thought they did a pretty good job, Teddy and Pat Shurmur, in dispersing the ball. Look around. Look at the targets. Judy had 7. Fant had 8. Hamler, Patrick 4. Albert O 3. Cortland Sutton 3. Melvin Gordon, 11 carries, 3 targets in the passing game. Javonte Williams, 14 carries. So, you know, no one player, yeah, if you're the Giants, there wasn't one player, either receiver or running back, that you could focus on, that you could target.
Right. Yes. 100%. I mean, it was ball distribution at its finest. Jerry Jeudy led the cavalcade with 6 receptions. But then you had, you know, guys like Noah Fant, you know, getting his 5 or 6 receptions. And you got, you know, I think Albert O probably had 3 or 4 receptions. I'm just off the top of my head. KJ probably had 2 or 3 receptions. You know, I mean, it was, and then a bunch of guys, Cortland, I think, had 1 or 2. And it was, you know, a bunch of guys getting opportunities to catch the ball and make the most of that.
Got another bonus question mark. This one, again, with a hash brown sent into the internet, and I like this one. Mark, tell me why if Drew Lock was playing yesterday, the results would have been different. Good question. I mean, you know, just to kind of set that up before you answer, remember last year his best game of the season against Carolina was a game in which there was great balance. He didn't have to throw the ball a ton, had the support of a good running game, a lot of two tight end looks, and he went out and played very well in that game. So same scenario, but Drew Lock playing yesterday, do we get a similar result?
No. And, you know, it's funny that everybody will sit and say he played a really good game. And, you know, he made three throws on busted coverages that ended up being touchdowns, right? Wasn't it three throws? I went back and really did the deep dive into that game last year because I wanted to see what the Broncos offense looked like balanced using multiple tight ends, because that's what we saw in camp. So that was one of the games I did a deep dive on. I went into other games and did situational stuff, right? Like, what were they on third down here? What were they on in the red zone here? What were they, you know, what were their explosive runs in these games? But I did the kind of deep dive in Carolina. I probably wrote down in my notes over half a dozen times, this is why Drew Lock isn't starting. And not understanding protection, taking a hit on strip sack fumble where you got to get rid of the ball where you're not protected. Not throwing it, not understanding the route combination and throwing it to the wrong guy, throwing it into coverage. There were a bunch, not having pocket presence. There were a bunch of plays, Mike, when you go back and you look at that game and you really look at what they were calling and what they did. I know the general fan said, oh, Drew Lock played great. He didn't. They had three or four big plays that, hey, I'll give him credit. He threw the ball exceptionally well on three or four big plays. But the pocket presence and the decision making in the pocket really weren't very good. And I could take you through them. I could sit down with you and show you the film to where you're like, oh, ew. And again, this is a kid that is learning. Like, he is, feet wise, like I'm talking to Pat Shurmur before the game, just on the field. And, you know, one of the things he said to me that was very telling in the decision making process for Teddy is the guy, he said this exactly, the guy has West Coast feet. He has West Coast feet.
And that means what?
It means that his feet, he's been under center. He's been trained since he was at Louisville. He understands the drops, the timing of the drops, what the footwork is on every play. So his feet time up with the route combinations. His feet time up with the route combinations and allow him to throw the ball on time before the receivers come out of their breaks. He goes, he's been classically trained. He's got West Coast feet, not only under center, but in shotgun. He's got West Coast feet. And I knew exactly what Pat Shurmur was talking about. And without saying Drew Lock doesn't, Drew Lock doesn't. And listen, I'm not, this is not, it's like what James Marilyn came on and said, I'm not sitting here, this is not a Drew Lock, smear campaign. These are the things that he never was trained when he was at Missouri. There's a reason he dropped to the second round. These are the things that he didn't have and the things that he was never asked to do and the things that he is trying to learn on the fly. Teddy's been trained that way since he was in college. And see the difference.
What am I hearing here? Because I was very happy with what Bridgewater did. Sign me up for about 10 or 12 more of those throughout the course of the season. Love it. Very, very impressed, very satisfied. But I also know this guy's history, his background, and I need to see a lot more before I'm completely convinced. But yet what I'm hearing from you, I'm hearing a ringing endorsement that I need to clarify. Is this pro-Teddy talk that I'm hearing from you just in the context of Teddy versus Drew? Or am I hearing you talk about Teddy in a way that makes you think Teddy could be the long-term answer here?
I'm sitting right with you. I'm sitting right where you're sitting. Is I want to watch this for 10 or 12 games. I do. And I think Teddy can be a very viable playoff quarterback if you have the right pieces around him. And you know, I mean, again, you talk to Vic Fangio, you talk to Shurmur, you talk to other guys on the offense when it in regards to Teddy Bridgewater. It's the calming effect that he brings to everyone. It's the confidence that he brings to everyone. He has those leadership qualities in space. Now, he's never been able. I mean, last year were career highs. Like 15 touchdowns was a career high for him. You know, I mean, the yardage was only, what, 3,200 yards or something? It was a career high for Teddy. So, like, again, the ceiling, can you bust through it? Can you bust through it and have that be your new ceiling? Because if you can do that, then we're talking about the potential of having a guy that can really lead your football team, Mike. But no, I'm not sitting here telling you I think he is the long-term answer. I'm not sitting here saying, hey, if you get in a shootout with Patrick Mahomes or Justin Herbert, he's going to go toe for toe with you. I don't believe that's who he is. I just don't believe in that, but he definitely does the let's stay on schedule stuff exceptionally well.
This is from Fred listening in Jacksonville. See, Mark, this is where you lose me. When Locke hit Hamler in the preseason, it was, that's an easy throw that every QB can make. Teddy underthrows it, and it's Hamler's fault. Look, Teddy played great. Teddy should be the starter. Hamler absolutely should have caught it. But let's just be real. Even Teddy would probably tell you that he should have made a better throw. We don't have to gloss everything he does.
I'm not glossing anything he does. I'm not glossing anything he does. So that's not gloss. You're putting in an area. The receiver was 5 yards behind the DB. Catch it. Catch the damn ball. And, you know, when I talked about Drew, that ball was beautifully thrown. Drew. And yes, yeah, I mean, those are some of the easier throws in football, right? You're just throwing it to an area down the field and letting your receiver adjust to it. Do you understand that? Adjust to it. Mike, one criticism of Drew on that play is that you get into a meeting and you're like, that ball shouldn't come down at 62. Ball should come down at 47. And so what ends up happening is you're saying, dude, you're holding it too long. Get rid of it. As soon as that guy, you know, it's the old John Madden. If he's even, he's leaving. As soon as he's even, throw it. You see the safety suck his feet up and he gets even. You don't have to wait until he's, you know, 14 yards past it. Hey man, bottom line is that ball should be caught. That ball, no question. And the point with Drew Locke was just saying, like, to try to educate the fan base. Well, who was that in Jacksonville?
Fred.
Fred in Jacksonville. Trying to educate the fan base that even on a great play like that, there are coaching points. I wasn't in the meetings. I'm just telling you the kind of coaching points that happen to you over the course of a football season when even a great play can be not criticized but coached from a really good coaching staff. And those are the things that happen to you in meetings when you're a player.
Another one here on the RamosLaw.com text line on this Broncos Reaction Monday. Loving the text. Keep them coming. Guys, I'm a lifelong fan, but you guys sound like a bunch of giddy school kids this morning. The media fog is affecting your opinion. You'll be singing a different tune at the end of the season asking heads to roll. All right. Let's take that Let's take that at face value.
Okay.
How should we frame this victory? How should Broncos country, how should the media, how should this victory be framed?
Well, one, number one, Mike, you and I said it was a must win on the road in an environment that for a year didn't have fans. New York City, the day after 9/11. Now, if you don't think those elements are tough to play in, you obviously don't know much about football. Those are incredibly tough elements to play in. Okay? So that's number one. So to go on the road anytime and get a victory is hard. To go on the road and blow a team out in the NFL is even harder. To go on the road with those circumstances is incredibly difficult. So one, you should be, Broncos country should be excited. They should have on the orange colored glasses today. Then I'll continue. I understand that their offensive line is not very good right now. I get that. You know what? I'll totally give you that. But I'm from a weapon standpoint, the Giants are talented. They've got a talented, big, strong, fast, young quarterback who can really throw it, although he's still learning the game as well. And they've got Saquon Barkley back from injury. They've got Darius Slayton who can really run. They've got Shepard who's a problem, you know, in the slot. And they have a guy in Kenny Golladay who is a big-time wide receiver. And they've got some tight ends. They missed Ingram from an injury standpoint. But Kyle Rudolph's done it for a very long time. And Caden Smith is a good player. So it's not like they don't have weapons that you have to defend. They certainly do. And defensively, at the end of the year, you mark my word, even without, Mike, a complementary offense that really solves some of those equations, that defense at the end of the year will be in the top 12 defenses in all of football, even with an offense that struggles.
Hey, I'm not going to apologize for being happy to talk about a Bronco win in September. Guess what? We haven't had any of these the last couple of years. I'll take it. I'll be happy with it. But I'm not getting carried away with it. All this win does, and it's why I called it a must win, was in order to put yourself in a position to possibly, underline it three times, possibly be a contender, you had to take advantage of this soft part of the schedule that we immediately identified as such when the schedule came out. So they checked that first box. They're 1-0.
Mm-hmm.
They got to go 3-0. And if they're 3-0, you know what they've done? They've put themselves in a position where now they're going to be playing meaningful football games. And we'll see how they do. But I'll let you answer for yourself, but am I taking this victory as a sure sign that the Broncos are a 10-win or 11-win team that is now an instant playoff contender? Nope. But they've at least given themselves a chance to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way they were going to give themselves a chance was if they took advantage of this soft schedule. And they're 1-for-1 so far. So allow others to enjoy this victory while understanding, you know, for all the buzzkills out there, and boy, I've seen plenty of Captain Buzzkills on the text line, understand we're not getting carried away, or I'm not getting carried away. The win is what the win is, but I'd rather they win a game they were supposed to win than lose a game they were supposed to win. How about that?
Yes. I'm not either. You know, I'm not jumping on the we're going straight to the playoff bandwagon. But, you know, all things considered, that's a game I could see the Broncos finding a way to lose, you know, in the past. And listen, all we have to go on is the past. And what they did was cure some of the things that have ailed them in the past when it comes to making bad decisions and not winning football games, and they won it. And so, hey, man, more power to the Broncos. That was a really good victory in a really tough situation against a really good defense and an offense that hasn't found its way.
This one, Bridgewater got lucky and his teammates bailed him out. Wait a minute.
Where?
Wait a minute. I need some more examples. But did I say all last week that isn't this the idea behind drafting Noah Fant in the first round, Cortland Sutton in the second round, Jerry Jeudy in the first round, KJ Hamler in the second round, moving up to trade for Javonte Williams in the second round? I won't use the S word for these guys, but they were brought in, they were drafted with the idea that they are playmakers. They are difference makers once you get the ball into their hands. And I am buying into the idea, okay, until proven otherwise, I've always believed, you know how I feel, Mark, that a lot of these guys play dependent positions and their success is predicated on who's the quarterback and who's getting the ball to them. But for this year, I'll go in with the experiment that you can have just an effective quarterback, not a great quarterback, but an effective quarterback. And if he can get the ball into the hands of these so-called playmakers, then they go out and make the difference on their own. Great example, the Albert O play, right? Yeah, Teddy made a very good play to keep the play alive, but it was a short pass to Albert O, who then made a terrific individual play to score the touchdown. Those are the kind of examples. KJ Hamler, all right, he dropped the ball, but his ability to stress the defense and his speed allowed him to be wide open.
Right.
So
and then he made a great catch on the sideline on a corner route where, again, Mike, and these are the little things that the little nuanced aspects of the game that oftentimes go unnoticed, where his quarterback, you know, put it on the money and said, here's an opportunity to redeem yourself.
Right. Go make a play.
Those things, hey man, I believe in you. You dropped the ball, no big deal. Doesn't matter. We all make mistakes. Let's roll. I mean, that stuff goes a long way. It really does.
Another question, Mark. Was this one of Vic Fangio's best game management games?
Yeah, I thought, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, it really comes down to that second quarter call, where they go for it on fourth down, which is, I mean, that is just gutsy, borderlining dumb. And it worked out for them. And, you know, it's, if it doesn't work, you know, it's all the hindsight being 2020. If it doesn't work, it's dumb. If, it works, you just got guts. And it turned out he just had guts, but, you know, I kept going back and on the broadcast thinking, you're 0-7 in September, man. I'm putting it on the line. I trust you guys. I believe my offense for the first time in my career as Denver Broncos coach. And we're going to put our faith in our players. It was a gutsy, gutsy call, Mike, but, you know, hindsight being 2020, I think he was coaching that's the way he was coaching.
One more. Guys, when did Paxton cross the border, kidnap Aaron Rodgers, and pose as the Packers QB? Only Paxton Lynch could have played that bad.
I never, you know what, I didn't put two and two together, but that may be the only explanation of what went down in Jacksonville yesterday. It wasn't actually Aaron Rodgers.
I like it. I love the headline on ESPN today. They were talking about Rodgers. Remember how he talked about the beautiful mystery?
Mm-hmm.
They had a headline that just was beautiful misery.
Beautiful. That is nice.
That was good. Yeah, it's open season on Aaron Rodgers right now.
Take shots, baby. Take your shots.
I'd still take them. I'd still bolt out to the airport to pick them up.
Yeah.
Don't worry about that.
You and me both.
Hey, and look at the bright side. If he continues to play this way, maybe the asking price goes down a little bit. Maybe you don't have to give up 3 first-rounders.
Yeah, maybe they just kick him to the curb. We told you so. Then why'd you keep him?
All right. Much more on the text line. It is a Bronco Reaction Monday, giving you a chance to respond. Terrific text so far. We'll keep them going next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors is the home of zero down. Regardless of your credit or financial situation, Siltahar Motors will help you get behind the wheel. People with poor credit or in bankruptcy can qualify for zero down and no payments for 45 days and be driving in their new car within hours of stopping by the dealership. Check out any of the cars Siltahar Motors currently has on site at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors is conveniently located at Highway 36 in Wadsworth, so regardless of your financial situation, Siltahar Motors will get you the car you deserve at sthmotors.com.
I guess I'm a little bit surprised that we're being accused of being too overly giddy about this Broncos win. Excuse me, but there hasn't been a whole lot of winning around here over the last handful of years. And never mind blowout wins on the road. I think we should be allowed to enjoy this, can't we? Just for the time being, enjoy it. Enjoy Teddy Bridgewater going out and, you know, playing a really, you know, poised game, making some big plays. Vic Fangio coaching maybe his best game as a Bronco, going for it on fourth down 3 times. Why can't we enjoy, you know, George Payton goes out and makes a couple of moves, and we see Javonte Williams actually carry the ball more times than Melvin Gordon. Gordon looked good, but Williams making an immediate impact. Why can't we accentuate the positives after this one game?
I don't know. I mean, I think we should be able to. I think we should be able to enjoy that. I mean, and I think part of it, Mike, is that, you know, the average fan will sit here and say, well, you know, the Giants are just garbage. And, so let's not get too excited about beating a garbage team. And I understand that. I understand the Giants offensively. Listen, they had the majority of their offense was injured all preseason. So Kenny Golladay only practiced a little bit. You know, Shepard has always got some type of leg injury that he's dealing with. So he didn't play a lot. Evan Ingram had a calf. He didn't play in the game. So yeah, I get that they've had some injury issues. And I get their offensive line hasn't played well. But again, I keep going to, I think the average fan looks at the Giants and goes, well, they're a garbage team. Listen, man, they have a really good defense. I think their coach is legit. I think they're trying to figure out what they are on the offensive side of the ball. And they have a young quarterback that hasn't quite figured it out yet. He's getting better, but he hasn't figured it out.
I don't see it. I don't see it. I think the Giants are going to be back in the quarterback pool after this year.
Oh, do you think he's done?
I just don't see him being the guy.
Yeah, it's interesting.
What was that, his 28th start yesterday?
He had a couple drives where he played really well. My touchdown drive, he played exceptionally well. But then he
fumbled, a huge fumble.
A huge monster fumble. Well, I get that, and he's turned it over. I mean, he went into that game with 39 turnovers, so he leads in 2 years. He leads the league in turnovers with interceptions and fumbles. So, and, you know, he reverts back to where he doesn't get off receivers quickly enough. You know, he doesn't get from one side to the next side. He'll lock on a red line, a receiver, and just stay on that guy. So that's part of what he's trying to overcome and what he's trying to figure out. But, you know, I mean, I don't know. They seem to think he's going to figure it out.
I think it's more they have no choice but to hope he can figure it out. Hope, not they
well,
know.
Mike,
they have no choice but to hope he can figure it out.
Mike, okay, like he's basically in a better spot than the Bills were after 2 years with Josh Allen.
I don't know. I Oh. I thought Josh Allen, I felt a little bit convinced about Allen after 2 years than Jones.
Get your chubby little fingers going. Efforting music, Ben. Look at the first two seasons of Allen. Completion percentage, touchdowns versus interceptions, all that, and then look at Daniel Jones.
All right, hold on.
With an offensive line that can't, you know, that has been under construction from the day that Daniel Jones got there. By the way, his rookie year, he threw 24 TDs versus like 12 picks. 2-1.
Okay. So first 2 years for Daniel Jones, he completed about 61% of his passes, averaged about 3,000 yards passing, 35 touchdowns to 22 picks, and he ran for 3 touchdowns. Josh Allen in his first 2 years, completion percentage about 55%, averaged about 2,500 yards passing, 30 touchdowns to 21 interceptions, but 17 rushing touchdowns. So that's the big difference. Otherwise, right. You're right. It's just passing quarterbacks.
Just from
about the same.
But from a passing standpoint, I'll tell you that Daniel Jones has been better in his first 2 years passing. So when you're passing the, when you have that kind of running game that you've established around Josh Allen in those 2 years, and you're only completing 55%, meaning off of all those designed QB run plays and the RPO game, you've got a passing game off of that. That should be easy. They should be easy completions. And they weren't for him in his first year. So I'm just telling you, Daniel Jones played better in his first 2 years as a passing quarterback than Josh Allen.
Again, I hate to point out how wrong you are. Actually, I don't hate. I love it. Because Daniel Jones' first year went 24-12, second year 11-10. He regressed, whereas Allen first year was 10-12 and then went to 20-9 on his way to 37-10. So there was a definite upward arrow pointing up, whereas Jones has gone backwards.
Again, I hate to point out how you don't know football because it bothers me.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
We got him.
Yeah, seems like I hit a little too close to home with that one.
No. You didn't hit it all because, again, you're just incorrect.
Uh-huh.
You tell me roster-wise where their two rosters are offensively. The Bills are a much better group up front, much more tied together, could run the ball in Josh Allen's first year. So the Giants have just not had that capability. And oh, by the way, the 1 year they had Saquon Barkley had 91 receptions and over 2,000 total yards is the rookie year where he played really well. Again, his roster was put together to where he could have some success. They have not had that up front. No continuity, no ability up front. And you saw it yesterday as well. So, I'm just telling you. Hey man, I don't know that Josh Allen's gonna get it. I mean, excuse me, that Daniel Jones is gonna get it, Mike. I don't, but that's, you know, obviously that's their hope.
All right, well, the Broncos did what they were supposed to do, against Daniel Jones, shut down Saquon Barkley as well. So, hey, all positives, all thumbs up.
Yes.
From week one. And Mark's broadcast. The man that delivered, people, he delivered as promised. Details next.
Here's Peppers coming right off the side here. And, you know, you ever read those old Western books like Old Gunfighter, Smoke Jensen? You don't want the quarterback to be able to clear leather. You don't want him to be able to get that ball out of his hand and throw the football. That time, that pressure created that errant throw, that throwaway right there. And we'll see if they do it on third down again.
Oh, my God. I don't know what to say.
Yeah. You're welcome, Mike.
Wow. Like, I knew you'd get the phrase that pays in.
Right.
I had no doubts. I had no worries. Some people were like, is he going to get it in? I had no worries that you were going to get clear leather in. But the fact that you also referenced the classic Western series with the famous gunfighter Smoke Jensen, and you got that in there too, was just, I mean, impressive isn't the right word to say. It's just, it's next level. It's just, it's extraordinary. And then you got the gumdrop button in. You got snot bubble in. You got Man 101 in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Dude. Take a bow.
Yeah. Well, it was flowing like the salmon of Capistrano, you know? I mean, just flowing.
As one texter says, what button? You could not even see any buttons. Methinks the button drama leading up to the game was largely fabricated and exaggerated. Tell me why I'm wrong. Oh, no, it was not exaggerated. You should have been here about a month ago.
It was real. It was real. And, you know, yours truly went from, well, when we started, I was 260. But when I started, I was 265 and a little change. So down, what is that? I was 241 Sunday. So that's, what, 24 pounds? Down 24 pounds in about...
In a month and a half?
Yeah, 6-7 weeks.
You going to be able to keep it up?
Oh, yeah.
You going to regress?
No, am I going to regress?
You going to exhale?
No.
Let down?
No, although last night...
Read your press clippings?
Last night I did come home, Mike. It was, you know, midnight. And I got to be honest, man. I was a little bit like a ravenous bear finding a cache, you know. Just like, oh, honey, where's the honey? Oh, need some sweets. And I was rummaging around the kitchen trying to be quiet, but a bear rummaging through a cache can't be quiet. And ultimately, I had a handful of mixed nuts and went to bed.
That's it?
Yeah, and a water. And a water.
Impressive.
Yeah.
Impressive. I was on with D-Mac yesterday, you know, Mr. Mungbean himself, and he's like, how did Mark do it? What was his, what did he do? What was his diet? I'm like, well, honestly, it was skipping a lot of meals and eating a lot of nuts. That's basically it. He ate a lot of nuts and then meat at night. That was about it. That was the plan for the last month and a half. A lot of nuts and meat.
Yeah, nuts for a snack, a little intermittent fasting, nuts for a snack, and then meat and veggies.
Once gumdrop buttons dropped, I lost my damn mind running around the house.
Do we have the gumdrop buttons? Wait, let me hear what it sounded like.
I know. We don't have gumdrop buttons? No? Okay.
No, not the buttons!
How do you not have
gumdrop buttons?
Note, please. Note to the producers of these fine programs, Millennial Ben, Richie. Okay, alert people that when Mark's calling a game, a Bronco game, we need to have the phrases that pay handy. People need to be alert. They need to be rolling. They need to grab it.
How do you not have the gumdrop buttons? What the heck's going on there?
Please stop.
Man, when you dropped that, I nearly rolled off my couch. It was just like, I couldn't believe it.
I was thinking about you.
Just next level.
As soon as it fell out of my mouth, I was just thinking about you. I was like, Mike is going crazy.
I was. I totally was.
Mm-hmm.
And based on the reaction on the text line, so is everyone else. So
right.
It was great because the game was already in hand. People were enjoying it. And then you threw that one down. That was great.
Yeah.
More reaction from Kirk. Mark, 8 a.m. texter here with a positive take.
Okay.
I thought your calls were fair and fun. Made my wife, who hates listening to commentators, and father-in-law laugh out loud more than a couple of times. Love the passion and humor. Thanks for the call.
Oh, well, see, there you go. I even got a whole math equation thing done in there, you know, and we're talking about taking a point off the board.
Yeah,
You know, I mean,
16 minus 17 minus 6, 1 by 1 is 16. Add the 1 back, it's back to 17.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was, I don't know. It just, you know what? It was fun. And it was fun to see a game that was really competitive early, where the Broncos hung in there and essentially, you know, imposed their will. And when you can hang in there and you can really dominate a line of scrimmage and you can impose your will, guess what? Very close games become blowouts in the fourth quarter. And that's what we witnessed. And that it just reminds me of my days in Washington when we were good and my days under Mike Shanahan here when we were good. When you would, you know, you'd be watching a game, Mike, and it'd be close. And then all of a sudden it'd be like, damn, the Broncos are just, you know, just curb stomping these dudes. And that's kind of what the Broncos did to the Giants yesterday. And boy, oh boy, let me just tell you my social media feed from Giant fan. All these people that the Giants are going to trash. I got a couple of them saved. I got a couple of my arch nemesis on the Giant side saved, and I cannot wait. I'm going to, a little later on today, I'm just going to go, hey, how was the game?
Further proof that you are not a bad winner.
Terrible winner. I am a horrible winner. I am a very good loser. I will lose with grace, with kindness, with humility. I will win with the utmost of pompousness. I will be on top of Mount Pompous.
Game balls were given to Von Miller, Teddy Bridgewater, and George Payton getting game balls yesterday. People asking about the status of Jerry Jeudy. The good news is, boy, when you see a player, I don't know what you were thinking at the time, but when you
initial thought, Mike, right off the bat, high ankle sprain.
Oh, you did right away.
Yeah, because where he landed on, I've had it happen to me during the course of my career two or three times. And that's the actuator when your leg gets trapped underneath you and somebody lands, like mid shin. And what happens is here's what happens in that injury. The body weight slams your two bones together. You know, your tibia and fibula. It smashes those two bones together. And as they rebound or expand, it rips that tissue between the two bones. That's what a high ankle sprain is, or how it's been explained to me. And so, like, you can walk and there's no real sign of swelling in the ankle or anything. You can walk just fine. But when you put pressure, like, on your big toe and twist that way, I swear to you, I've had a couple that are so bad, I thought for sure 100%, I made them x-ray my leg. Like, my leg's broken.
So when he's being carted off and he's got tears in his eyes, he probably thinks
he broke his leg. That's what it feels like. I kid you not, it's excruciating. It feels like you broke, when they just put the slightest amount of pressure on your toe, it feels like your leg is broken because all those muscles that are, you know, integral to holding those two bones in place get ripped. That's what a high ankle sprain, that's how it's been explained.
So he's going to be out for a while. I mean, these high ankle sprains, don't they tend to be at least a month?
Yeah, 4 to 6 weeks. He's going to miss some time.
Last one, really quick. Guys, I think everyone enjoyed Mark's call, but I'm not sure Garrett Bowles will be thrilled about the snot bubble comment.
Oh, yeah, everybody. I mean, I said, hey, you play the game long enough, someone's going to knock you on your keister. I mean, it happens, man. Nothing wrong with that.
It happens. No holding calls.
No, Garrett Bowles turned the corner, man. He's played well.
All right. Good job, Mark. Welcome back. Rest, relax a little bit. Keep eating those nuts, and we'll turn things over to Chad and Nate next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.